Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The Big Bets on Campus podcast. Podcast.
All right, here we go.
Spreading the court. 10 seconds remaining.
They just got to throw it under the basket. Under the basket.
It's the truth for the win. Gone. Oh! They did it. A miracle.
Hutchins. Double order. Hit that one from the parking lot.
Welcome to the Big Bets on Campus podcast presented by BetMGM. I am your host, Kai McEwen, joined by the rest of the three-man weave crew, Matt Cox and Jim Root. Today, we are cannonballing into the deep end of the Sweet 16, previewing every game on both Thursday and Friday. Goliath or Cinderella, it's win or go home. We're talking sides, maybe some totals, and of course, any possible props that might jump out to us. Not really a prop group, the three-man weave, but you never know where you can find value in March Madness. Let's jump right into it. Chronological order. We are starting with the Thursday games with Michigan State and Kansas State, 6:30 p.m. Eastern tip in New York City. Jim Root, what do you got?
Well, yeah, we've got the surprise line here. Michigan State favorite. I don't think many people expected that. Kansas State was an underdog to Kentucky. Okay, I sort of saw that given the talent level of Kentucky. But seeing Kansas State a dog to Michigan State really raised an eyebrow. I guess they're giving Michigan State a lot of credit for the time they played without Malik Hall from a predictive standpoint. It's interesting, Matt. Sparty is here in the Sweet 16, despite having shot terribly from beyond the arc, and that's kind of been their calling card all year. They don't take a ton. They're not like mega reliant on the three, but they have been a top 10 three-point shooting team all season by efficiency. That hasn't been the case. Their two-point defense has been dominant to this stage. Really impressive work by Sissoko, Hauser, Hall in the paint, taking that away from both of their first two opponents. I just think that's going to be really tough against Kansas State, who is much more dynamic offensively. They've got the two best players on the floor. Noel Speed really took over against Kentucky. Keontae Johnson didn't even have that good of a game, and they still moved on against the Wildcats. I can't help it. I like Kansas State getting points here with arguably the two best players on the floor. And I don't feel like this is any sort of coaching mismatch with Izzo versus a first-year guy. I'm riding with Tang, Matthew. Tang game for me.
Yeah, this one's tough. Like, the Michigan State scoring, it's weird to think of Michigan State as an offensive-leaning team, and that's kind of what they've turned into down the stretch, which fueled their recent run here. Just the shot-making of Hogard and Walker. I know they haven't shot well from three to date, but every team has been kind of suffering from that same, three-point regression lull. A lot's been made of how poor three-point shooting has been in the tournament so far. They've made a lot of mid-range tough shots, though, and tough twos in clutch moments. I think you have two guards that have that clutch gene, Michigan State. K-State only has one, but I like the one on K-State's side. I mean, Noel, just the way he's playing, the way he can get into the teeth of the defense, completely carve people up. I am trusting K-State here. I cannot believe that. Kai, I've been an anti-K-State guy all season. Michigan State, I think, played very well in those first two rounds. I think they benefited from really, really poor efforts from USC and a Marquette team that was playing without their best player at 100%, who also played his worst game of the season. So I'm kind of poking holes in the two games it took Sparty to get here and more impressed with, I guess, K-State's efforts.
Yeah, I kind of agree that, too, weirdly, even though Michigan State played Marquette. Yeah, I have no clue why Michigan State's favored. I honestly, it makes no sense to me. I'm trying to break it down and like understand the bookmakers' process here. I just don't get it. K-State's higher in KenPom. They're the better seed. They're higher in Bart Torvik since February 15th. I don't understand. I don't get the disrespect for Kansas State. Marquise Noel, this is a huge opportunity for him. He's from New York City. It's a big moment. We love guards in March, and this would be a great story for him to win this game. Coaching, pretty near even for me. I'm a big Tang guy. That's how much I like Tang. I'm putting him pretty close to Izzo on that tier. And I'm just not scared of Michigan State, man. They're solid on both ends. They're not elite. K-State is near elite on defense. They scrap. They work hard. I took the Cats, guys. I found a plus two, and I jumped on it. Kansas State for me.
There you go, Kai. We're seeing some action come in on K-State as we record. Down to 1.5. We're recording on Wednesday morning Pacific time. Seeing a little bit of buyback. The one other angle worth mentioning, this is one of the few totals in this entire tournament that's been bet up a little bit from openers at certain places. Considering how strong the unders have been, are you guys feeling the over real quick, Kai, or are you thinking, let's just keep riding the under train?
I don't have much of a feel here. Didn't overs do really well last round, if I'm not mistaken?
There's off a lot base. Of fouling, especially on Sunday. Yeah. Saturday, I think there was Sunday. Still a bunch of unders, but Sunday had quite a few overs.
Not a huge feel here. I guess gut says under. Neither team wows me offensively, so I just kind of lean towards that way, but nothing strong there on the total.
I heard Jim Adam Burke over at VSiN talk about how MSG is known as an under venue, especially in college games. Interesting to see this game bet up. The other game in this region we'll talk about was bet pretty heavy to the under. So I guess just something to keep in mind if you're into those venue related angles.
All right, Michigan State controls tempo. They did the same thing to Marquette. That was a relatively easy under until some of the late shot making. So Kai, I lean towards the under on that one as well.
Right on. Let's continue with Arkansas, UConn. Jim, you're going to be at this game in Vegas. What an awesome set of games you get to see in Vegas. We'll talk about the next one in just a little bit. But Arkansas versus UConn. UConn favored by 4 now across the board. It was 3.5 this morning. UConn's taking a bit of money here. I even see some 4.5 out there for the Huskies. Worth noting, KenPom does make this one, I think, 5 or 6. I have not checked recently on that one. Matthew, we're going to you first. Who do you like in this game? Also, total-wise, we're sitting at around 139, 140.
Went back and forth in this one as well. I think the market's pretty sharp on both side and total here. I think Connecticut was the more impressive team, to be honest, in the first two. Obviously, both teams were mega impressive. Arkansas beating Kansas is no joke. But just the way UConn responded to two really, really tough coaching challenges, a ton of pressure, eyeballs on that program with Dan Hurley's early tournament failures, takes care of Iona easily, renowned tournament coach in Rick Pitino. They put away St. Mary's pretty easily too. I mean, obviously 15 points. It was closer later than I think maybe the final score indicates. But that's a hard team to blow out. And to do it on a neutrals court, to see them making shots, Jim, I think that actually carries over here, that momentum. The talent gap here, not very big. Arkansas, I think that's what kind of gave them the edge against Kansas, is just pound for pound, Arkansas may have been the more talented team, even though Kansas kind of has that championship pedigree. I think the talent gap here rises for UConn. That negates what's helped Arkansas get to this point. And I will probably be losing money betting against Eric Musselman in the tournament for the third straight year, Jim.
Hey, he's only 7-8 against the spread in the tournament. Okay. This is not some masterclass Musselman, impossible to top him in March. I think he's like 3 of his last 4. But even some of the wins to get to the Elite Eight in the past, he hasn't covered those spreads. So it's not like it's an auto bet Musselman. You mentioned the shot making for UConn. Kai's said it all year. When this team makes shots, they are unbeatable. And they've been over 40% in both of their first two games from beyond the arc. Last game against St. Mary's, you got to combine 7 for 9 from Newton and Hawkins. That is nearly impossible to stop, especially with the way Sonogo was playing bully ball. This is probably my least confident game from a side perspective in this round. A slight lean towards Arkansas, but it's just hard to trust either team for me. I don't feel great about the shot decision making, the shot selection for each team. That really is where I get stuck, Kai. So maybe I lean to the under on the total, but gosh, this one is a real challenge, I think, to handicap.
I agree. Eric Musselman, by the way, another double-digit down victory for them. Arkansas, they're down 12 to KU, 15 minutes left, and they win outright. And he does this every single tournament. I don't get it. I don't understand. It's almost like you don't want to be up by 10 or more against Arkansas because you know they're going to come back and win. I agree with Matt here. Arkansas, extremely talented. UConn, pretty close. Arkansas, though, doesn't play like a team, man. I think it's more individuals out there than it is a team. Their lack of shooting is going to be really tough against UConn. You cannot score inside against UConn. Perhaps they get to the line. UConn does have quite a high foul rate, and Arkansas has been known to have success from the free throw line this season. But UConn has the glass advantage. Again, Jim mentioned it too. When they hit shots, they're the best team in the country. They are at their peak. They have that top gear. I'm not sure Arkansas does. So I do like UConn here a little bit, but I am scared to fade the horseshoe up Must Bus's butt. There you go. How about that for a line?
I just don't get why he's not playing Nick Smith again. Like, he's back in the doghouse. Weird. No points against Kansas. I thought the best version of Arkansas would involve Nick Smith, and it didn't against Kansas. But I think they need him if they're going to beat UConn. So if he continues to be in the doghouse, I do lean the Huskies. Potentially a live bet there if it seems like he's just going to be benched.
Absolutely. Next one, FAU, Tennessee. I'm glad we got the Owls, guys, to the Sweet 16. No offense to Fairleigh Dickinson, but we've been on the Florida Atlantic train all season long. Heck, Matt's been to a game in person. This one tips off in New York City after Michigan State, Kansas State at 9 p.m. Eastern. Realistically, probably a little bit after that. The line out there, 5.5, pretty much across the board in favor of the Vols. Got a pretty low total here, 130.5, 131. Jim, I said I'd basically take FAU blind because I love them so much, but I will admit 4 or 5 is kind of low, 5, 5.5, but it's a really good team. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought it would be more, but then Kenpom's got it 4, which is shocking. Wow. Like, yeah. And that's if you factor in the year long of having Ziegler and whether you think this Tennessee version is significantly worse or even a little bit worse, that tilts him more towards 3, 3.5. But FAU's just been that good. And I think this is a problem matchup for Tennessee. They have not played teams that can shoot all year in the SEC. They did not play a team that could shoot in Duke in the round of 32. The Cajuns could a little bit in the first round. They don't prefer to do that, but they can shoot. And I think that helped them keep that close a little bit. And now you take on FAU, who just lives to space the floor, 4 out with a bunch of different playmakers, a bunch of different creators. I think FAU can shoot and stay in this and kind of give Tennessee a little bit of a rude awakening from the perimeter. It's just, can they handle the toughness, the physicality that Tennessee is going to bring? That's what kind of punked Duke. I'm sure Plavsic is going to hit Golden in the face with an elbow early to try to set the tone. Golden is no slouch, though. I don't expect him to back down. And Dusty may joke that they were going to watch rugby to prepare for this one and this potential matchup against the brawlers that Tennessee throws out there. I think they're up to the task, Matt. The depth, the two-headed monster they have up front to use fouls if need be. It could be tough on the defensive glass given the size, athleticism that Tennessee throws at you in waves. But I just trust FAU's offense, the game plan, and their ability to step up in that physicality class. Look, they already beat Memphis. That's a physical monster. I don't think there's anything crazy new to them. I like FAU back in the underdog position here.
Yeah, I mean, I have a million reasons why I love FAU in general and in this game. But I want to hit on two things that I think are going to ultimately dictate the outcome. First is how this game is refereed. The whistle, which I thought really was the prevailing edge for Tennessee against Duke. I'm not saying, you know, you can litigate how loose or how, you know, accurate the whistle was called in that game. If the refs let the boys play, Tennessee will certainly have a big edge in this game. The way it's going to go.
245th nationally in defensive free throw rate, and they committed 11 fouls versus total, both halves.
Total, right.
Three in the second half. It was insane.
They committed more than that. They just weren't called. Let's just call it how it was. But again, I think that's kind of the theme with the SEC, right? It's they come out of that league where, you know, the referees come from everywhere, and this is sort of, you don't know what you're going to get. We'll see how it's called. I think the whistle being whistled like it was against Duke gives a huge edge to Tennessee. However, I think FAU is up to the physical boxing match challenge, unlike Duke. Like, this FAU team, they're not big, but they're older than Duke. I think people talk about FAU being a young team, but their freshman sophomores are like COVID freshman sophomores. They're not like the green, just out of high school grassroots guys like Proctor, who like is 17, and, you know, and Whitehead. So I think in Filipowski, I think FAU actually has like some real grit to them, even though they're not all that big. I worry though, Kai, FAU's one matchup issue this season was Middle Tennessee, kind of a physical type of team. That's kind of how they make their pay, and they struggled to kind of get separation from them in their two wins. They actually lost to them on the road. I look at that as a precedent that gives me some pause, but I've been all in on this FAU team all year. I just trust the mojo they have right now. Now they're back as the underdog spot after the being the favorite, the villain against FTU. Man, I just like that. They make some shots, get out in transition. I think they actually can pull off the upset here.
Yeah, I do too. But Jim's point about the rugby game, what May said in his presser, and your point about if the refs call this in Tennessee's favor, it's going to be really a really big challenge. I think because of how physical, how tough, how rough, dirty maybe Tennessee plays, if the refs aren't calling it close, they can beat anybody in the country. They're that physical and that overwhelming to face when they're allowed to do that. But FAU is tough. I agree totally. John L. Davis, one of the tougher guys in the country, in my opinion, in the backcourt. I agree. They are much older than they look on paper. They are mostly juniors and sophomores, really, not freshmen, sophomores.
Right.
And they're a team. They're not Arkansas individual players. They're a team. Multiple guys can beat you. They're connected on offense and defense, a very good interior defense, need to force Tennessee to shoot, hope they're cold, keep them off the glass. I think they kind of can. I think it's competitive, close. I'm taking FAU, Jim.
Yeah, from a one player prop perspective, Matt, you've mentioned you think one of FAU's weaknesses is if you post up the four man because they just don't have size. I think Kamwa can have another huge game here for Tennessee.
Huge.
Play him alongside Adu and Plasek. I think they're going to go through Kamwa, make Nelly Davis guard in the post, make Elijah Martin try to D up there. That's a real issue. If you can't play Adu and Plasek off the court with spacing, then Kamwa could have a monster game. I think looking at his points or rebounds or combined overs are a potential good look there.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
College hoops betting is heating up, so get in on the action with the King of Sportsbooks. Sign up with BetMGM using bonus code ACTION and get up to $1,000 paid back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Michigan, Mississippi, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, Tennessee, Virginia, Washington, D.C., West Virginia, Wyoming, or Ontario only. Must be 21 or older to wager. 19 or older in Ontario. New custom offer only. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility agreements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. This excludes Michigan disassociated persons. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, D.C., Kansas, Louisiana, Nevada, Wyoming, or Virginia, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan, 1-800-GAMBLER in Indiana, Maryland, New Jersey, or West Virginia, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York. Call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789 or call 1-888-777-9696 in Mississippi. In Ontario, if you have questions or concerns about your gambling or someone close to you, please contact Connects Ontario at 1-866-531-2600 to speak to an advisor free of charge. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, and Utah, and other states where prohibited. Promotional offers not available in Nevada and New York.
Moving on to the nightcap in Las Vegas, Gonzaga versus UCLA. Around 9:45 Eastern tip here. It's a matchup we all wanted here. Zags, UCLA, man, what a, it's going to be an awesome, awesome game. Of course, a rematch of the previous Final Four game we saw a few years ago, which was also incredible. Hey, money coming in right now on the Zags. It's pretty much painted 1.5 now everywhere. UCLA was a 2, I think even 2.5 point favorite at one point. High-ish total, though maybe not as high as we'd expect. We'll see. It's a bit of a pace battle in this game. 145.5, 146 right now. Matthew, who do you think gets it done here?
I like Gonzaga. I really do. I'm wondering if the money, which could just be late money, of course. People probably waiting to bet later in the week at higher limits, but I think it's mostly injury-related as people are tracking the Edembona updates. It looked a lot more ominous when he went down last weekend. All signs were pointing to him playing this week, but it's just been one of those recurring shoulder things that you can't trust or feel 100% confident he's going to go or he's not going to go. And if he goes, how well is he going to play? And not to belittle that point, but he is absolutely critical against Gonzaga. I would think he would be a candidate to check Timmy if he was in there. It's curious how Cronin decides to handle that. I think the bigger interesting and the more interesting part here, Jim, is how fast this game's played. How much does UCLA try and slow it down? And does that actually work to their favor? I tend to think it actually works against them sometimes because they're actually pretty good in transition when they get out there. But against Gonzaga, I think you're walking into a you're walking on fire there if you get into a track meet with those guys.
Yeah, I think you want to slow down Gonzaga, frustrate them, take away the running game where they just get the ball and walk it up. It's what Arkansas did to them last year. They just got sick of trying to run against a great transition defense. And that takes away an awesome aspect of the Zag offense. They are a steamroller when they get running. The other injury news worth monitoring here, David Singleton for UCLA. He had the ankle roll that we were worried was a knee. There's video of him walking to the bus yesterday for UCLA. He looks healthy, fine. He's obviously not cutting or jumping in that view, but he's not limping, seems to be in good spirits. They need him. Otherwise, you're going to get what a lot of Dylan Andrews, I guess. They're basically going to play five guys. Campbell, Hawkes, and Bailey played 38 minutes against Northwestern. Probably going to be 38-40 in this game again. That makes me lean towards under. They are really going to turn this into a grinder given their lack of depth. So lean the under, Kai. Slightly into UCLA on side because I just don't believe in the Gonzaga defense. Mm-hmm. And I'll take issue with this being the matchup we all wanted to see because I wanted my Frogs here. I wanted UCLA and the Frogs. And I know Stuckey did as well. So that's hurtful. But this is a great game nonetheless. Excited to see it in Vegas. It's going to be an awesome atmosphere because both fan bases have been here for Pac-12 tournament. They will travel, certainly. So lean UCLA, not betting the side, I don't think, but I really like the under.
Yeah, you have to keep Gonzaga out of transition. UC doesn't have a chance if Gonzaga gets to play their game, in my opinion. They just have a lack of depth, and Gonzaga's too good in transition. I agree, though, with their defense point. It's a major weakness. How long can they survive in this tournament with a subpar defense? It's the third worst in the tournament of teams left. I'll bring this up later with Miami as well. But the offense is the best in the country. They can... Out of every single team left, they are the team that can simply outscore opponents and still win games here. And I think the injury to Jalen Clark has finally felt here for UCLA, right? He'd be huge as a defender, Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year against Gonzaga. I don't think anybody can stop Drew Timmy, but I do think UCLA can score as well against Gonzaga. Campbell, of course, senior point guard, Hawkes, All-American, Bailey. He's a great scorer as well. Just not as potent as Gonzaga. I think it's going to be close back and forth. Cronin, no doubt, has a great game plan for this one. My heart wants Gonzaga, so I'm sticking with Gonzaga here. 1.5, tough money line, I guess. Yeah, small lean there.
Yeah, UCLA had 1.13 points per possession against a very vaunted Northwestern defense. Mm-hmm. With, again, that was with Singleton going down and Bona as well. So, I mean, it's basically three guys. It's Bailey, Hawkes, Campbell. It's a three-man show for the Bruins at this point. So they're up against it.
All right, let's shift to Friday, guys. Four more great games here, starting with Alabama, San Diego State, 6:30 p.m. Eastern tip in Louisville. Louisville. Alabama, guys, is no doubt the favorite in this game. A whopping, drumroll please, 7.5 points pretty much across the board. Some sevens out there as well. Total 136.5, 137. Jim, start with you. What do you think?
Alabama's rolling, man. They have figured it out. They put Javon Quinterly into the starting lineup 5 games ago in the SEC tournament, and they have beaten 5 straight NCAA tournament teams by 19 or more, just running them out of the gym. That includes Texas A&M, pretty good team, Mississippi State, a play-in team, Maryland, 7, 8, 9 seed. This is the best team they played in that stretch if you go by seed, but I still just believe Alabama is a skyrocketing force right now. If you want to back San Diego State, maybe you do it first half. But Matt, I think the fade Mountain West is still a little bit in order. San Diego State barely crept by the first round, barely covered against Charleston. I think they got an awesome matchup second round in Furman that just couldn't withstand their physicality. This is where the Aztecs run into trouble for me. I try to make an argument that they keep it close. Maybe they do for a little bit. But I think the depth potency of Alabama wears them down, and perhaps even get a slightly healthier Brandon Miller, who has not been efficient yet this tournament. Suddenly he could have a big game and this turns into a runaway. So I lean the Tide even at 7.5.
And I almost wish they would arrest him more the last weekend. They didn't really need him. And this is kind of the theme with Alabama is like, yeah, Brandon Miller is amazing, but you know, that he played basically was a nothing burger against who was it against Corpus Christi, 0 mm-hmm. points. And they ran
zero
away
points.
Against Mizzou in the SEC tournament semis, 1 of 13, Quinterly and Sears from 3 combined, 1 by 11, right? Like, there's so much potency in terms of offensive firepower. They can score inside out, and there's never going to be a situation where you're going to get like Brandon Miller and Quinterly and Sears and the other guy's not hitting. And if they're not, they still have the defense to back him up and keep him in his, like, there's just so many like layers of protection that can keep them from losing. And not just losing, but also covering spreads. Like, it's just hard to find an avenue that San Diego State can really exploit here. Maybe just their general identity and physicality, and the potential upside that those guards have this season. Like, maybe this is the game where Matt Bradley comes out and, you know, torches the Nets. Tramiel makes some really tough shots. Butler gets out in transition, maybe makes some stuff happen in the open court. He could thrive in this type of up and down game. I don't know, though, man. Like, if you're betting against Alabama, I think you're really trying to find something that's just not there.
Yeah, I think San Diego State tends to fare better when it can win the athlete and the physicality battle, and you really can't do either against Alabama. Just not going to happen. So they're going to try to muck it up. San Diego State does have a great defense, but I think Bama is just too talented. And this offense for San Diego State is definitely better than the offenses we're used to seeing from the Aztecs, but it's still prone to stagnation. Bama has a top three defense in the country. It's just a really tough matchup for them. So the spread's about right, in my opinion. Yeah, maybe a slightly into Alabama. It's very hard for me to see San Diego State winning this game outright.
Yeah, their offense down the stretch of games just turns into muck. It is like, what are we doing? Just Matt Bradley kind of like spinning, trying to get down the lane and then fading away from 16 feet or whatever. It's not it's not pretty. Definitely not against Bama.
Matt Bradley, not exactly a long player. Pretty compact, Matt Bradley, against this Alabama defense. All right, next game here in Kansas City, it's Houston versus Miami, 7:15 p.m. Eastern tip. Matthew, going to you first. Thoughts? Canes and Houston. The spread is also seven and a half. Basically the same spread we saw for Bama, San Diego State. 7.5. Pretty similar to total too. 137.5, 138.
Yeah, Houston with Sasser back was partly impressive, partly concerning, I guess, if you're talking about Houston's title prognosis and the dominant team, dominant force that we saw for most of the year, although some cracks emerged in some spots. I do think some cracks emerged last game. Defensively, not all as organized as I thought. I know Auburn made some tough shots there, but the fact that they were down against a team I don't like in Auburn, Sasser's second game back, while he should have played better this game, he still isn't 100% healthy, I don't believe, and just the fact that he had that long layoff gives me a little bit of the heebie-jeebies because this offense, Houston, needs him badly. Maybe not against Miami, maybe not against a shorter, more brittle front line, but whatever they get supplementing on the second and third chance opportunities, I think Miami can also get into gaps on the offensive end and actually make shots. Even though Houston's defense is renowned, I just think Miami's elite shot making can help negate that. The general theme, great offense beats great defense. Miami has two great offensive players that if they're on, doesn't matter how good defense Houston plays. Like, I think they're going to be right there to cover the seven. I actually like the dog here, Jim, and that's kind of a cover your eyes bet going against Houston, but I don't think they're as invincible as they looked a couple weeks ago.
Hey, Sasser played pretty well, man.
He played well. He was great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
The second half was like, oh, this is Houston. 50-23 against Auburn, like just absolutely demolished them. They sucked the life out of them. Somebody called it like an anaconda, just squeezing the life out of Auburn. And they did that while also getting a great offensive game from Mark, from Sasser. Mark's kind of the swing guy. Like, if you get the contributions on the ball from him, especially with Shed and Sasser banged up, suddenly this team is unstoppable. I had rewatched them play Oral Roberts way, way back early in the season, and Mark was running a lot of ball screens, pulling up in the mid-range, kind of brought that same thing to the Auburn game. That's huge. I think Houston's going to get a ton on the offensive glass. Miami not great on the defensive glass. I know they just absolutely punked Indiana on the boards, like 48-31, got more than half their misses against that Indiana front line. That is wild. I don't think they're going to have the same success here. Houston's not a dominant defensive rebounding team, but they are offensively. They're much more physical. They're going to be tuned into what Miami's trying to do on the O glass. And there's nobody bigger on Miami to take advantage of the Houston bigs being like 6'7", 6'8". So despite being, I think Houston wins, Kai, but I do think the potency of the Miami guards makes me lean that way on the spread getting seven.
Yeah, and I'm going to pose the defensive question again I did with Gonzaga. How long can Miami last having a defense that ranks outside the top 100 nationally? Because Houston can score. 1.27 points per possession against Auburn is no joke. They have talent, skill, and of course, extreme toughness and physicality. I do think it's going to be a pretty huge advantage on the glass for them offensively. Arguably the best offensive rebounding team in the country against a defensive rebounding squad in Miami. It's not been that great this season on that end. Omer is great. but I just think Houston has too much size up front, can out-muscle him. And their defense, of course, Houston, incredible. Can harass Miami's group of guards. Can Miami's group of guards shoot over the top? Absolutely. And march the guards game. But good luck if those shots aren't falling for Miami, because you're not going to get buckets inside. I think the line's about right here. I'm rooting for the Cougs for futures purposes. But I would not be surprised if Miami kept it close and covered seven. I think Houston moves on.
Yeah, sneaky injury note, Wooga Poplar, who's actually been pretty good for Miami,
been good.
Has yet to practice this week per the Miami Herald as of Wednesday morning. Maybe he gets in there by Friday, but I do think they need him. That's a lot of Bensley Joseph and some of the bigger lineups they have to play with Miller.
Yeah,
I think they need Poplar. He's actually been really, really good for him.
Yeah, probably the most physical defensive guard. Like, you need a kind of a counter against Houston. So that's a good point.
All right, nightcap, fellas, in Louisville. Creighton, Princeton, 9 p.m. Eastern. Creighton favored by 9.5. I do see a 10 out there. And I'm telling you right now, Matthew, I grabbed the 10 for Princeton.
Did you?
Tigers. Yes, sir. Do you agree with me? What do you think?
I'm torn on this one. I tend to agree. I thought that NC State would be better at exploiting the Ryan Kalkbrenner drop coverage and just try and put a bunch of ball screens at him and to hope those guards make shots. I think Princeton makes, or they come at it, they'll come at Creighton from like a little bit different of an angle, right? Like with Tosin as their quasi five, the way he can bring it up and transition, the way they can kind of use him as a trigger man on offense.
Wait, can I take issue? I don't think he's their five. Like Kelman is pretty obviously their five, right?
Yeah, sorry. I guess he's positionless five, but I still view him as like their five. But you're right, I guess Kelman is really their five. But
do they play him at five though? Occasionally they'll throw him at a five, right?
Yeah, if they go small, like when Kelman's off the floor, for sure.
Yeah.
So I guess to your point, you think Kalk will be on Kelman. That's probably fair. I think you see a lot more toes on at five. I think if Henderson's,
yes, they should do.
They're going to come out with a little more smaller of a look. Like, just don't match up with the bigger guy and don't look them in the mirror. Try and do something different to thwart what they have. If they can do that, I really like Princeton's chance to score here, because Tosin in the open floor is like fantastic, great passer. And the way Princeton has shot the ball, which actually hasn't been that great, right? One of these mid-major teams like FAU that's actually made the run despite not being white hot from three. You know, they blew by your Missouri Tigers without making outside shots, just because they got so many good open looks. Creighton's more disciplined defensively. I'm with Kai though. It just felt big, a little too big for me, Jim.
Maybe a tad high. I don't know. I think Princeton benefited from playing two teams that need to run. Both Arizona and Mizzou love transition game, especially if they can force turnovers on the Mizzou side. And Princeton took care of the ball, kind of cut them at the knees offensively there, forced them to execute in the half court. I think Creighton's better in the half court than either Arizona or Mizzou. They have played really effectively through Kalkbrenner pick and roll so far. Nemhard had the monster game against Baylor. Kalkbrenner dominated the opening round matchup with NC State. You mentioned the defensive discipline of Creighton. They forced Flagler and Cryer into a combined 21 twos last round. And in the opening round, Joyner and Turk Smith took 35 twos against this defense. They run you off the line. They kind of force you into that mid-range, make you challenge Kalkbrenner, who just never fouls. He's perfect with his verticality. I think this is a much tougher matchup for Princeton. So I tend to agree the numbers is a bit high, but I think Creighton is rolling right now. And as long as they don't do anything silly with their shot selection, I think they can actually cover this game. So Kai, split on the 10, but I definitely lean towards the under,
yeah.
By the way. I think Princeton continues to just turn games into a grind.
Yeah, to the 4-5 debate. So Kelman's played 15 minutes per game last two games. They played a lot of Zach Martini against Arizona. A little foul trouble, but they also just chose to play him against Mizzou. There could be matchups you might actually need Kelman more against Kalkbrenner, but I guess if they didn't do it against Arizona, can get away with it again. I've said it all tournament. Princeton offense, very tough to prep against. Creighton has a little more time to do that, but I still think it's hard to prep and practice for all the cutting, the counters, the intricacies of the offense. I think it's just tough to do. Maybe first half is where you look for Princeton again, like you did against Arizona. Of course, they won the game outright eventually. I just think it's simply too many points for the pace that I think it'll be played at. I agree with Jim's under angle. I do think Tosin will be a tough matchup for even Kaluma. If that ends up being the matchup, I mean, he's just a great player. He's a tough matchup for anybody. Creighton does run teams off the line, but Princeton with those cuts, I don't know, maybe they're okay with that. And it's just a weird dynamic. I don't know if Creighton's seen a cutting team quite as good as this. Maybe Marquette would be up there as well. Jays obviously have the talent edge, athleticism edge. I do think they're going to win. Just 10's a little bit too much for me. So I did take the Princeton Tigers here against the spread. All right, last game, fellas. We are going back to Kansas City for Xavier in Texas, 9:45 p.m. Eastern tip. This one is 4.5 in favor of the Longhorns, just about everywhere you look. Starting with Jim, what do you got here?
Boy, this version of Texas is really good. Since the Big 12 tournament where Timmy Allen missed, they're getting Dylan Disu playing at basically All-American levels. Last five games, averaging 18-9 in 26 minutes. That was always kind of the knock, is, all right, where do they get easy, consistent buckets from the paint? They had great guard play, especially with the emergence of Serge Ibaka Rice. But if Disu is going to do this, whew, look out, man. That makes Texas really deadly. I was impressed with what they did down the stretch against Penn State when they took a 10-0 punch and responded with a 10-0 run right back, retook the lead, retook control. There was some spread drama late in that game with shot making from Penn State, but Texas still managed to get the victory. Looking at player props, Disu's up to 13.5. People are very on to how well he's playing. I don't know if I would strongly recommend that, but he has been dominant lately. Going against Jack Nungy, that's a pretty tough matchup as well. Matt, who do you trust more from a perimeter playmaking, shot-making perspective? Sule Boom and Adam Kunkel, or Marcus Carr and Serge Ibaka Rice?
Texas Rice is the X factor for me. Like, the emergence of Rice, the emergence of Disu is why Texas went from fringe top 10-ish for me to, like, probably the second-best team behind Bama at this point. Because Disu gets you some on the defensive end too, right? He's the rim protector they didn't really have. So their defense is lifted. Their offensive balance is lifted. DCU's had favorable matchups, I will say that, in his recent run. He's been awesome. But now he gets a Xavier front line, which isn't as vaunted in terms of just pure size without Fremantle, but it's still bigger. It's tougher, right? Sean Miller, Hunter, Nungy, you know, they're not soft. Colby Jones, I know, plays on the perimeter, but, like, they're a little tougher, I think. But I think their guards are weak defensively on the perimeter, right? We saw Kennesaw run circles around him, getting every shot they wanted for 35 minutes. I think this is a big Marcus Carr, big Jabari Rice, big Tyrese Hunter game. I think the guards for Texas are the differentiator for me here. And I think they win. I think this is probably the best bet in the first round for me.
Ooh, yeah, best bet in the first round, Matthew.
It's close to my
minus
favorite
four.
One,
I think I'd lay it up to like six. I really would. I think they take Xavier to the woodshed. Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about Xavier's defense has been a little bit better lately, though, right? They've kind of retooled, figured it out since Fremantle's been out. But yeah, can it stand up to Texas? I don't know. I agree. Texas is scary good. Super old, tons of weapons in the backcourt. You guys mentioned Disu. Yeah. If he plays at this level, I agree. They might be the second best team in the country behind Alabama. Of course, I always have Houston up there as well. Xavier has shooting to their advantage. They have a knockdown group of shooters, you know, one of the best 3-point shooting teams in the country, always the equalizer. But Texas, I think, can cause some issues back there in the backcourt. Boom, Kunkel, and Jones, they're fantastic. They're not immune to turnovers. They're an experienced group, but they're not immune to getting a little flustered back there. Weird question. Does Texas have an answer for Nungy? Nungy has been a very impressive guy for me. He can shoot. He can score in the post. He's a legit 7 feet. Disu's been great. He has a shot blocker, but I weirdly think Nungy has a nice matchup in this one. I do think Sean Miller is a much better coach than Rodney Terry. No offense to Rodney Terry. I don't know, guys. I kind of lean towards Xavier here. Am I crazy? Am I nuts?
Yeah,
you're crazy. Crazy. Get out of here.
Wow.
Texas feels like closer to Kennesaw than to Pitt, where there's a bunch of athletes and physicality and guards that can make plays. Pitt is more guard-oriented, not as physical in the paint. I agree with you. Nungy might be, you know, worth a look in a player prop market or something because Disu doesn't have the same size as him. But I think the way Jerome Hunter's been playing, maybe that could be a little inflated. 10.5. I was thinking it'd be higher given how much he's scoring.
Hunter's been awesome too, by the way.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, he's been really dominant. Good. That's why I was really thinking. Good. I was hoping it'd be like 13.5 for his prop mark, and you could take the under in points there. But no, I'm with Matt. Texas and Kai is crazy, and we're gonna pillage him if this game works out in our favor.
Hey, to be fair, KenPom, Texas top 15 in both offense and defense. Nothing to sneeze at. I'm not sure how many teams in the country can claim that. Maybe two other ones. Yeah, that's insane. All right, fellas. Hey, good podcast. Thank you out there for joining us on the BBOC Big Bets on Campus podcast, presented by MGM once again. We will see you guys next time for a special Final Four episode next week. Yes, sir. The Final Four is coming up very, very soon in Houston. But till then, good luck in your Sweet 16 and your Elite 8 bets. And again, enjoy watching college basketball.
Action Network reminds you, please gamble responsibly. If you or someone you care about has a gambling problem, help is available 24/7 at 1-800-GAMBLER.